Andrew Hinchelwood first came to Thunder Bay in the late 1970s to attend Lakehead University. After leaving for a while to complete his MA at York and filing x-rays at Sunnybrook Hospital, he returned to Northern Ontario for work in archaeology. Time passed like dirt through a screen. Andrew married Heather Hopkins in this very building. They had two lovely children together, and he wound up being a professional archaeologist with a special focus on post-glacial occupations, stone tools, and archaeology policy. Recently, Andrew has been involved in the development of archaeology policy for the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nation in Southern Ontario, and is currently excavating a large early site near Emo. He now lives on Salt Spring Island, although spending most of his summers traveling around the Northwest working on archaeology projects, large and small. Andrew.
And now the sermon. Kia whakatumori te hari ki mua. Kia whakatumori te hari ki mua. That's a Maori proverb, or whakatauka, that translates as, to walk into the future, we must keep our eyes fixed on the past. And those of you who do wilderness canoeing are familiar with this concept. Louder? Closer? Okay. Or I could shout more.
No.
So what this means, this concept means, is that we carry the past with us. It's the foundation of tradition and culture, such as the order of service. It's a reassuring repetition of a process that we go through each Sunday when we gather. It's a tradition that helps bind us together. And it is, in addition to the culture and tradition, our past. But where is this past? Looking around, I can see evidence of the age of the building, friends I've known for years, and even in the negative space. When I helped John and Stella Evans, it's funny. They were moving to Hamilton, and I helped them clear out some of their junk to take it to the dump. And one of the things that was in their collection of junk was were the bits of plywood that were cut out to make this chalice. I was going to gesture over there. When I practiced, I was gesturing that way. But you've moved it on me. But remember the stage? So all of these things, the negative space also is evidence of the past. But all of these traces, all of this evidence, the archaeological artifacts that I excavate, the things we see around us, our old friends, they're all in the present. So the past is really the present past. It's manifest in things, but more importantly, it's manifest in the stories that we use to organize our thinking about these things. Too sibilant, William? Yeah, a little hissy. So these are the narratives, the stories that we tell about our past, about ourselves. So instead of a physical past, our traditions, our culture, they're sustained more by narratives, by stories. So I work as an archaeologist, and my time is spent working with material traces of the past when I can find them, and reporting what I find and observe. And so my experience has been that trying to reconstruct a vibrant society from stone tools, it's not very easy. I can talk about stone tools until you are all asleep. But it's very difficult for me to draw out, it's impossible, the laughter, the love, the care for children, the highs, the lows, what they had for supper last night, how they handled leftovers. All of these things, they're invisible because they're not there in the archaeological record. It's not so. What we do is we retreat to our comfortable present. We develop specialist knowledge and analytic techniques, these are archaeologists I'm talking about, and produce increasingly theoretical stories about archaeology. And this is an interesting thing. There was a mention of privilege in the last song. And since the first North American archaeology law was passed, the Antiquities Act of 1906 in the United States, the whole narrative around archaeology has followed two main strands. Archaeological sites represent a common heritage or a shared past, and that preservation and protection of archaeological sites require specialist treatment. They have to be handled by archaeologists, not just by anybody. So over time, and as subsequent laws were passed, including the Ontario Heritage Act here in Ontario, the authority to speak on behalf of archaeological sites was increasingly concentrated under the control of archaeologists or archaeology professionals. So all of those stories that might have been embedded in those sites, the laughter, the love, the children, the ceremonies, they became our domain. And at the same time, the public interest narratives about the past also followed this trend and focused on archaeologists. You watch shows on archaeology on TV now, and what you see are grizzled old experts running around following backhoes and holding up, you know, fantastic finds. It's like the antique roadshow, only dirtier. Now, I don't mind this. You know, archaeologists as a group hold considerable knowledge about archaeology and the techniques necessary to recover this knowledge from sites. But only that knowledge, not the other stuff. So that raises the question, what about the past? What about the traditions and cultures that may also use these sites to build narratives about themselves? In my work as an archaeologist, I've had opportunity to work with many Indigenous groups and communities and individuals around northwestern Ontario and elsewhere. And working in this context, it reveals the gap between archaeology as a technology or set of techniques and Indigenous narratives of the past. Because really, you think about it, the stories that you tell over Thanksgiving dinner about the time, you know, Uncle Boffo sat on a cake or whatever, those stories are different than the stuff you have around your house, even the pictures in frames and so forth. And so I want to be clear, I'm not arguing that archaeologists have been complicit in some vast conspiracy to suppress native history or Indigenous narratives around archaeological sites. But I am saying that policy and practice, as it's evolved over time, have drawn the work of archaeologists towards technique and away from this broader public interest. Because we've forgotten that the public includes not just the archaeologists, the academics, the interested lay persons, but it includes our treaty partners, it includes the Indigenous communities, the Métis people. So I would say that many in 2018, many, perhaps most archaeologists have become very aware of the gap between what archaeologists do with the stuff they dig up and the other narratives that exist in Indigenous communities. And it's sort of brought archaeologists face to face with the new post-truth and reconciliation reality, that we have to act in reconciliation, that we have to not just treat ourselves as the privileged professionals, but we have to open up archaeology to some extent to introduce. See, I even hedged on that. Did you see that? Catch me there? To some extent, we have to open up archaeology to include all of the publics, all of the people who may use those sites to build narratives about their traditions and their past. So the challenge facing archaeologists is how we reconcile our work of building narratives around artifacts and sites with the work of cultural restoration, recovery, and renewal going on within Indigenous communities. a lot of this comes down to policy and practice. So I was recently involved, as David mentioned, in a project to prepare archaeological guidelines for a First Nation in Southern Ontario. And the format that we chose, which turned out to be infuriating to some of my colleagues down there, was to reproduce the existing archaeological guidelines that are formulated under the Ontario Heritage Act, but to change the emphasis away from technical archaeological practice onto the concerns of the community members. So the policy now, it explicitly serves the interests of the Mississaugas of the New Credit First Nation, where they had previously downplayed finding a tooth or a finger bone. Well, anybody, you know, your fingers just fall off, right? They don't worry. These were treated as miscellaneous objects, you know, collected, treated appropriately, but not given special consideration. And yet, to the First Nation, they said, well, those are human remains, are they not? So should they not be treated like human remains? And so it created a new way of interacting with the sites. In the same sense, parts of archaeological sites that don't have artifacts, the areas that archaeologists gloss over quickly, were of interest to the community because of what they might have been for, right? The middle of your living room may have a coffee table, but there's a lot of empty space, and it's where you live, in your living room. So the artifacts are signaling where stuff was left behind, and the empty space in these sites was also signaling some other cultural practice. So in practice, many archaeologists are now acknowledging that their work is a technical practice. It provides, we dig holes very carefully and very slowly. It's a technical practice that is directed towards collecting data and constructing narratives. But we are starting to recognize that the narratives we're creating, we're not just creating one narrative, but multiple narratives. And accepting this is to accept that there's no single answer, there's no single past, and that in sort of, here's my brainy sounding part of the talk, in the non-Euclidean geometry of stories, a single point in space can be occupied by many overlapping and incompatible narratives. So you can have a place that is an archaeological site. It may be a place where people continue to sit and rest and enjoy a summer's breeze. It may also be a valuable real estate holding. It may also include a place of spiritual or cultural value. The biggest challenge to us as archaeologists is recognizing that our techniques of recovering stuff from the ground isn't the same set of techniques that you need to recover stories, that you need to identify sacred locations on the landscape, that you need to identify subsistence places or trails or any number of other intangible heritage values or cultural features on the landscape. And that you can go to an archaeological site and dig it up, and you may be missing most of the story. Is that time up? Oh, sorry. So now I'm breathing into it. So my academic background is in anthropology, historical geography, and public policy. I wasn't trained as an archaeologist from the beginning straight through to my PhD. So perhaps I'm not as strongly invested in mainstream archaeological practice, but I found it fairly straightforward to look at the work that I do and the narratives that I've supported and see where indigenous narratives have either been excluded or could have been brought more centrally into the process. It's been a little bit harder to move from expert to technician as my primary role, but I found it incredibly rewarding to bring indigenous narratives into my work. When I work with a First Nations crew, as I am out in Emo, I allow them to identify what they think is important about the way we're excavating the site, where we should go next, and how we treat those voids between artifact clusters. They go back to the communities, they hear things that they don't tell me about the stories that they're constructing about the archaeological sites, And you know what? That's okay with me, because the community owns that history. They own that past as much as I'm burdened with all of this, all of the artifacts. And so it's important. Yeah, what I found is that I'm holding space for Indigenous narratives around archaeological sites as places, that even when they conflict with the orthodoxies that I've learned and adhere to, and to build new stories that serve, in the final analysis, all of these stories together, they do serve the public interest in archaeology. So, reconciliation. Bringing archaeology to a place where Indigenous knowledge, culture, and a sense of place is honored, it's important, and it seems easy in this context. But when humans get involved, there are egos and conflicting narratives and all of that stuff that we have to work through. And hopefully the professional archaeologists can work through that without too many tears. But this sort of leads to the question about a broader question of reconciliation that I'll leave you with. And that is, what narratives of life or the past, about your own life or the work that you do, the organizations you belong to and promote, how do these narratives that you build up, how do they reinforce your life? That's something to reflect on. Your life story. That's your story. That's what you tell people. It's your identity, and it's very much a core value. And how can you open the narratives that you hold dear to your personal sense of self, and to bring them closer to the experience of First Nations people, the lived experience of First Nations people? That is, how can you open up some of the narratives that you rely on in your work, in your personal life, in your hobbies, in your practices, in your way of living, to create space for these alternate, these other narratives that may not be that different than your own, but as I've gone through with archaeology as an example, sometimes it's very revealing when you just ask yourself those questions about what are we holding on to, and are we holding on to it too hard and we're not letting other people in? So ends the sermon. I wrote that on the plane, so I hope the altitude didn't come through.